I think you can have a bad prime, right? Like there's when you think prime, you think you've peaked, like that's the top right. of the mountain in terms of success. If you're awful at what you do, you can have a bad prime where you're even worse in this window than you generally are. And I think Milbury was like in his prime when he made that deal, because it was Spezza and Chara for Yashin.
It was, right?
I believe it was actually the second overall pick in Chara for Yashin, which turned into Jason Spezza. Anyway, here's a guy that only had a positive prime. Nothing but upside. Joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN Jays and MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. Nothing but a positive prime for you, right, Steve?
I got to tell you what, I was getting a little worried how that segue was going to work out for me. I started envisioning where that was going, and it did not look like what it turned out to be. So thank you for being so gracious.
What's your highest profile move, Steve, that was terrible?
No, I didn't have any. It was amazing how that worked.
Yeah, you do.
Not a single one, honestly. Bobby Bonilla.
Other than that, who brought Piazza to New York? Put your hand up,
Steve.
There
you go. Now we're talking. Let's go. What else you got for me?
Well, actually, I saw it today was, I guess, the anniversary, the 20th anniversary, the first game post 9/11 when Piazza hit that home run. And I'm assuming you were in the building for that, or can you remember that home run?
I was there for it. Yeah, sure. In fact, I was in the building, and I had meetings all day with the FBI and Office of Emergency Management, the police department, and the fire department, and understand there were going to be more undercover officers than there were uniformed officers there, that we would have snipers in the scoreboard and on the roof, and it was going to be a fortress. They were, first time metal detectors were being used in the sporting event in New York, and I remember, going from sitting in those meetings to then going upstairs to my box where I'd watch the game. And I was overwhelmed in the afternoon. I had to get out. Bomb sniffing dogs were walking through every 15 minutes. And I'm thinking, like, what are we doing? Like, we're coming back to play, and this is what it's going to be. And I remember going up there, and Diana Ross was rehearsing with a gospel choir down on the field. I just started bawling. I mean, she was singing, God Bless America, touching each of the high school band, choir kids' faces when they were talking. And then the whole lead up to the game and the bagpipes coming in and the first responders, the looks on the faces of the first responders. And I mentioned this in the piece that I did, on SportsCenter a couple weeks ago, but it was the most silent moment of silence I've ever been a part of. Because usually you hear some, shuffling, or somebody will be mumbling. It was silent. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop, and that really spoke to where everybody was in a, contemplating what we were dealing with and where we were emotionally with everything. And the bagpipes and they would play the sadness of the moment. But then the team shaking hands and the Braves and Mets who didn't like each other, the 21-gun salute, where the guns went off, and it shook you every time you heard the crack of the guns and the three calls of the guns. And so it was, then obviously the Piazza home run, which, you saw the dots connecting, and you thought, could this possibly be the storybook ending where Alfonso walked in the eighth inning, we're down a run, Piazza coming to the plate, the stadium rising, and just the noise of the stadium, the anticipation of the stadium, and then Piazza taking a strike and a fastball away, and I thought, now he's just going to get curveballs. Now, Steve Carce, who was in for the Braves, who's a New Yorker himself, had a great curveball, and talking to Piazza, he said, I thought I took that fastball. I thought, oh, man, I know he's got the good curveball. I'm going to take it if he throws it. And he threw him a fastball away, and he hit it out of the park, and just the eruption that took place there. I've never heard a louder stadium, and it wasn't a sellout crowd that night, I think, because of some of the fear that people had of coming out to an event. But, yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday, and the celebration of the home run and what it meant and all of the lead-up to that and having meetings with the players about evacuation plans and what would happen if something happened at the stadium. And so – it was a dramatic moment, and there were home runs that have been hit in bigger games, but I don't think there's ever been a bigger home run in New York sports history.
I was watching the video earlier today. Incredible. And I've seen it before. It's amazing. It's been 20 years. With Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Jays back in action tonight, game two of the three-game series against Tampa down at the Trop. Alec Manoah on the mound tonight. Yesterday, last night's game felt like a playoff game. Like felt like two teams. Tampa, you know what you're going to get out of Tampa. They're going to make you work for it. They're going to make you make a mistake, they're going to pounce. They did that all night. And they hit Robbie Ray, you know, pretty well last night. He was more wild than he has been. He didn't even get through five innings. But it was a bullpen game. It was a game of resiliency. I appreciate the way the Jays battled, you know, throughout the late innings and specifically in the ninth. Did not close the door, but they also didn't quit on it. I'm not a huge proponent of, you know, moral victories, especially when you're trying to punch your ticket. But I think there's something about this team that they're still proving, and they have to prove, that they have what it takes to punch that ticket. And I think even though they lost last night, the resiliency and the way they played later in the game, going into the bullpen the way they had to, I was impressed with their mentality last night. What did you make of the Jays?
Yeah, I did too. I mean, here's the thing. Robbie Ray, I think it was the sixth time he's pitched against Tampa Bay this year. And that's really tough to do. I mean, the familiarity that they start to get. And the most amazing statistic of the game yesterday was, you know, Robbie Ray threw, I don't know, I think 97 pitches through 4 2/3 innings. They fouled off 32 pitches.
Right.
They fouled off 32 pitches in 4 2/3 innings. Like Manny Margot, it, you know, it kept fouling off. Yeah, I think he had 210 pitch at bat. And you know, Robbie Ray just couldn't put him away. He couldn't put him away. And it was just one of those days. And listen, he got into some trouble, but he got out of it. And then it was the three-run homer off of Yandy Diaz. But, you know, short of that home run, if he makes a pitch and gets out of that, then, you know, who knows what happens in the game. But I agree. It was a playoff-caliber game. Both teams worthy of being on the field with each other. The kid for them threw great, man. Shane Baz, he's the third piece of the Chris Archer trade that they made that came with Tyler Glasnow, Austin Meadows, and Shane Baz. This kid was like as smooth and easy as a delivery as I've seen in the last couple of years, and the ball exploded out of his hand. And his dad was jacked. I don't know if you saw his dad in the stands, but his dad's got ginormous arms, man. It's like the kid's afraid not to pitch well because dad could do some damage. But it was really a good game, and I'm really excited to watch Manoah tonight pitching. And Fire Rising's really good. Got a great arm for them, too. Came over in a deal from the Brewers earlier this year. You know, Manoah was so good last time against him. We'll see if he can duplicate it.
Steve, we have a segment on this show called Level of Concern, and if we were doing this segment and Ryu's name came across your desk for part of the segment, what would your level of concern be where he's at right now?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty significant level of concern. You know, not for the long haul. I think that he'll recover physically, but I just think that he's worn down. And, you know, here's a guy, I think he had four elbow surgeries in his career. He's had shoulder surgery. He's had his groin torn off the bone. I mean, he's had a lot of injuries, and he doesn't handle the rigors very well. He needs to get some breaks. And I think the last time he made 30 starts in the season was his rookie year in 2013. So, you know, this is just different for him. And I think that the disabled list, the injured list, is probably the best thing to do. It protects him against himself and the team against throwing him out there. Here's the thing. They probably felt they couldn't afford to put him on the IL, but they can't afford not to put him on it if they're going to get anything on him the rest of the year. And so they're kind of caught in that in-between place. And when that happens, you take the conservative route. You put him on the injured list. You know, you've got two more years on him. You want to get him through and get something out of him this year. You're not going to get it if you keep pitching him. So they need to really let him recover. He's got some forearm stuff that's been bugging him. You know, they talked about his shoulder being a little bit tired. I mean, he needs a break. And it may be a little too late. It may have been that they should have done it in August when he first started showing signs. You know, you look back at his time with the Dodgers. They put him on the injured list for neck spasm, you know, fingernail, hangnail. I mean, they put him on the IL for whatever, because they knew that he needed breaks during the year. He's not that workhorse guy. And so I'm concerned, but you know, there's a shot that they can get him to recover and still pitch well. But I think they're okay even without him, with the fact that they've got four other guys who are pitching extremely well right now.
Yeah, they are, and they had to go to their bullpen last night, though. We'll see what Manoah's got. They play an afternoon game tomorrow where it's likely going to be a bullpen game, and then they're in Minnesota for four. So it's not as if they've got an off day here. That is the only thing that concerns me. If you drop it tonight, Yankees are playing, Sox are playing, and you're going to the bullpen tomorrow, and your bullpen is starting to get used a lot more than it was a week ago, how does that shake out tomorrow? Like, how do you see Montoyo utilizing basically an open slate here, or an empty slate, I should say, because Ryu will not be available for tomorrow's start?
Yeah, so, I think it just depends. I mean, they could go Hats, they can go Stripling, they could piggyback the two of them. And so I think they've got enough innings left over to do that. Now, if they need one of them in long relief tonight, then it makes it a little bit more difficult. But with the 28-man roster, with some flexibility to option guys out, if you need to option them out, you've got some room to jiggle with that a little bit. I think that, Manoah is going to be interesting to see how deep he can go into the game. Remember, 8 innings, 1 hit, no runs last time out against them. I did a piece for SportsCenter tonight. We're checking out Manoah's slider. His last start, he threw his slider more than he threw his four-seam fastball or his sinker. He got 65% swing and misses on the slider. 9 of his 10 strikeouts came on the slider. And his horizontal movement on his slider is 15.6 inches. The average major league slider has horizontal movement of 9 inches. So the movement swiping across the plate, the way it breaks across the plate, he gets 15.2 inches. The plate itself is 17 inches wide. He can start his slider on the inside part of the plate and break it off the plate, which is why hitters had such a tough time hitting him last time out. And that's what to watch for tonight, to see how much he goes to that slider in the game against the Rays.
Well, we'll see what he's got tonight. Those are wild stats, wild numbers. And listen, when you watch him, you can see it. And he'll be jacked up for the game tonight. It's a big one for the Jays. The Red Sox in action, Yankees in action. We're tracking it. 12 games to go. It's going to be a fun couple of weeks here. Great catching up with you, Steve. We'll do it again real soon.
Okay, terrific, guys. Thanks.
There is Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Check out MapleToyota.com. So we'll see. Alec Manoah going tonight. It'll be a bullpen game tomorrow. And the Sox are in action. The Yankees are in action.
A lot of moving parts. That's the thing. Nobody's out of it. That's the concerning part. You can drop one here or there, but you got to take care of your own. Manoah's got to have a big game tonight.
Think about that 1 year. What was the transaction, Hayes, where back in the day the Jays were in Detroit for four, I think?
Yeah, they lost their final 7 games to throw away the division. Yeah, that was back in 80. Yeah. That would have been, because they got there in 85.
It was mid-80s
late 80s. Mid-80s,
but
yeah.
It's not the point to dwell on the negativity of the past,
no.
But things can happen quickly
course.
Like a 5 or 6 day segment. So
nothing's locked in.
No.
Like Boston's got the Mets at home here. And the Yankees are playing, who are they playing? The Rangers at home.
Right.
So, those are very winnable games for both teams. And you're at the Trop against Tampa, a team that is going to win 100 games.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, you got Minnesota on the horizon. You got Baltimore still to come. But you got to take care of business, man. That's the beauty of baseball. That's the beauty of sports. Anything can happen. You cannot your foot off the gas. And this is an unfamiliar position for the Jays. This is where, when you compare it to Boston, compare it to New York, in terms of some of the big guys on that team, they have had a taste of meaningful games in September, getting into the playoffs. The Jays, even though it happened last year, it was a 60-game season, expanded playoffs. I don't think that necessarily counts. I don't think it necessarily applies to packed buildings in September, end of a 162-game grind. So they're the new kids on the block, and they've got to prove that they're up for it. And, you're going to lose ball games. You're going to lose to a team like Tampa. That's what happened last night. See what you've got in response tonight.